Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
Bonjour. No. I had the hiccups.
Здравствуйте.
What is that? What does that mean?
That's welcome in a formal way in Russian.
Oh, that's lovely. Здравствуйте. That's really lovely.
I'm very happy to see you today.
Oh, do your accent again.
I'm very happy to see you today.
Is that Russian?
Trying.
Oh.
Да. Я хорошо.
Okay, I'm going to answer you back in an accent. Tell me which accent I'm doing.
Okay. I like this game.
Good to see you today, Kevin. Oh, yeah.
You're Moira Kelly from Schitt's Creek when she gives the quote for Irish. She's like, it's like the Irish say. And then she like does it in an Irish accent. It's so good.
What accent?
That was your Irish accent, right?
I'm from Dublin.
Oh, your Dublin accent. You're a Dublinder.
Yeah, where are you from? From the States?
Yes.
Good for you.
That's nice. I can't wait to see your...
Thank you.
And your Martin McDonagh play. Any all of them. You're so good. The Crippleman of Inishmar. It's so good. It's
the Cripple of West Harlem. That's really what it's going to be.
The Cripple of 135th Street.
The Cripple.
Oops, so I just long, gave it away.
So long, 135th Street. No, I'm redecorating my apartment.
I know. You repainted.
I did.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So I'm very excited.
So you had to take down the cast album, the wall of cast albums, didn't you?
I did, so the guy could come in and paint.
Right. And what color is that hallway
going to
be?
Ooh, it's going to be called, it's actually the same color as your shirt. It's called Niagara Mist.
Ooh, you know, the names, who has that I job? Know. Like, that is just great.
Oh, yeah. So basically, my bedroom is gray, the living room is blue, and the bathroom is yellow.
Aw.
But technically, it's Silver Bullet in the bedroom, Niagara Mist in the living room, and Fiesta Yellow in my kitchen and bathroom.
Really nice.
It makes it look everything bigger, the yellow.
Gotcha.
It really does.
That's
and
nice.
It's nice and it's bright. And I had my why am I not making eye contact with you?
You give me like baby voice right now too.
when I painted my kitchen the last time, I had a brownie.
A special brownie.
By accident.
Did you pick like really? Yeah, it's a.
It was an ugly color.
Yeah, I know. It's a little. It could be.
It was seafoam green.
Yes, that's right.
And there was an accent wall of dark forest green, and I had so much of the.
You had accent wall for the accent wall.
Yeah, I and there's paint all over the ceiling, and I'm the only person I know who has a dimmer in their kitchen because I don't want people to see in full light what it looks like.
Oh, that's funny.
My neighbors across the street who sell crack even look in the window and shake their head about my life choices.
So. Well, now it's not. Now it's going to be a nice Fiesta Yellow.
Well, now it's Fiesta Yellow, and everyone can come over. We can have a nice big...
That's what I'm going to do.
And now we can have a nice big block party in my apartment.
Can't wait.
You're not invited.
Can't
you don't
wait to watch the Tony Awards and not turn on the air conditioning.
Oh, did you tell everyone that story? Did you tell them?
No, I remember last year, I don't know if we talked about it on air, but I had a great time at Rob's. Rob invited a couple people over, and we were like, oh, it's a hot June night. And then he's like, yeah, the air just doesn't, I don't know, it doesn't blast, it doesn't work that well. And it was on, but it was on fan, and we realized at the end. But it was okay. We still had a great time.
Well, everyone lost 5 pounds, so I don't
so
know
we
what.
Felt great.
So everyone felt really great. You had a nice schwitz. You got to see Dear Evan Hansen and have a nice schwitz.
That's right.
Still, yeah, it was fun. But we can't do that again this year because I'm going to be out of town.
I know, I'm sad. Remind us all where you're going and what you're doing.
Oh, I'm very lucky. So this summer, run down in my order here, I am going to Boston, and I'm directing The Drowsy Chaperone at Plymouth Beach Theater. Mm-hmm. And that is immediately followed by Wonderful Town at College Light Opera Company in Cape Cod for Bernstein Centennial. And John Lee Beatty worked at Clock at one point.
I love that that came up.
Cool.
Yeah, that was fun.
Good history. And then I'm doing I Love You, You're Perfect Now Change at Millbrook Playhouse in Pennsylvania. So it's a busy summer, which is good. And then 54 Below stuff. Oh, some really cool things happening for this summer. We're doing Yubi.
Exclamation mark.
Which is the music of UB Blake,
yeah.
Which is going to be very exciting because that hasn't been done in New York. No. I think since it's, you know, it's the 40th anniversary this year. We're doing UB. We're doing Working, which you are music directing.
Huzzah!
Which I'm very excited,
I'm excited
about.
Yeah.
And I'll break the news here first. Stephen Schwartz is going to not only be at the concert, he's going to sing in the concert, so you get to see some Stephen Schwartz goodness.
Fantastic.
And then in September, I'm really excited. We're doing a Ballroom. Because it's the 40th anniversary of Ballroom.
Well.
We have an offer out to someone to play the Dorothy Loudon role, and I hope she says yes. I'm very excited. I hope she does. I won't say who it is, but I'm very excited.
50% is like one of my favorite songs.
I don't iron his shirts.
I have a bootleg of Stritch singing it from a concert.
And so on his buttons.
No, it is so... Because Stritch could... Vulnerability was in her wheelhouse.
Yes.
And it is... It's heartbreaking. It is so good.
It's a brilliant song.
I love this one. Love it. So that's great. Ballroom. Wow.
Yeah. Fantastic. And then 50th anniversary of Golden Rainbow.
Golden Rainbow.
The Stephen Eady extravaganza. And I can tell you who the cast is because we just announced it. Are you ready for this? Debbie Gravett will be playing the Edie Gourmet role. She also played Edie Gourmet in the Bette Midler film, Isn't She Great? Where Bette Midler was Jacqueline Suzanne.
I don't know that.
So Debbie Gravett's going to be Edie Lawrence for us. And, Edie Gourmet for us. And Steve Lawrence's son, David, is going to take on his father's role.
Wow. That's really cool.
So I'm excited. So that's, and also, okay, Golden Rainbow, very quickly. It's not my favorite thing. I don't even remember if it has ever been a favorite thing for us.
No, it's come up because we've talked about the Tony Awards performance, I believe,
yes.
That it was performed on, because I remember watching the
Yes,
Tony
and Larry
Awards.
Merritt was in Golden Rainbow.
Yes, that's right.
Who he interviewed.
Yes.
Golden Rainbow does not have a good book. It didn't run very long.
It's like a Las Vegas spectacular.
Yeah.
Let's be real.
Steve Lawrence was this swinging single bachelor with a kid.
Yeah.
And his wife's sister comes, played by Edie Gourmet, to like put some order in the life. And of course, what happens?
Boom,
but
boom,
it's
boom.
Literally their like Vegas show. It's
right.
A Vegas show.
No, the opening is like crazy.
But everyone who saw it was like, a lot of people we've spoken to have been like, oh my God, it was terrible. But it's so good. Like Lonnie Price, I think, was like, oh my God, we used to go. He goes, my favorite theater memory is going to see Golden Rainbow. And somebody, I feel like Kathleen Marshall or somebody was like, oh my God, yeah, Golden Rainbow was one of my first.
Because it was like they grew up with it, and it was that, we've all had those. It's not the greatest musical, but it's entertaining, and it was a part of your childhood, so you love it anyway.
And when you listen to Golden Rainbow, it's so Vegas-y, but it's
I've
so good.
I've listened to it, and it's so schmaltzy.
24 hours a day.
Dun, dun.
And then Larry Merritt would dance on a slot
machine. Yeah, straight up, like, it's like we're in the Catskills. And it's like the entertainment of the Catskills of the 1960s.
You are loving the Catskills.
I am on
lately,
a Catskill
I can tell.
Kick. I'm obsessed with it.
What is it about the Catskills you
it's
like so
I
much?
It's because I did that reading of that musical of that they're doing at ACT right now.
Do you want to? What's it called again?
Walking on the Moon. I'm not part of it. There's no chance that I'm going to be in it. I mean, there's not even a close. But it's about the Catskills, the Jewish families that went up there in the 60s. It's based on the movie, Walk on the Moon. And I watched this documentary that I highly recommend called Kutcher's. It happened in Kutcher's.
Kutcher's, yeah.
And it's because that was one of the last of these resorts. It was a very middle-class resort. It's a very middle-class thing to do in the 60s. You leave the city, go up there for the week. The husbands would come up on the weekends, and then the wives and children would stay there during the week and have time alone. And so, no, it was just, and so that, but the Stephen Eady would play the circuit of the Catskills. It was like Sheldon Harnick. Everyone got started in the Catskills because it was a place you went. Moss Hart writes about it. In his book, you know, you did camps and you would put on shows and include, you know, it was adult camp that we don't have anymore, but they used to do it all the time. I'm obsessed.
What killed the Catskills?
Cars, driving and flying, traveling.
And something else.
What?
Air conditioning.
Oh.
Most families would go to the Catskills in the summer because it was cooler there because there was no air conditioning.
Of course, get out of the city.
But once people were able to buy individual air conditioning units, there was no need for them to leave the city anymore.
Interesting.
So air conditioning.
And if you wanted to travel, you could get on the plane and actually fly in 2 hours and go down to, you know, Florida or something.
Oh,
like
absolutely.
That,
you could go down to Miami Beach.
It became
in
middle class, people could afford to do that as opposed to just hopping in the car and driving up.
My
my
dad went to the Catskills a lot.
Really?
Yeah. That was like the big thing for the family. And he said his favorite thing to do it, there were two things he said that were funny about the Catskills. One was that they would usually bring on like hack comedians.
Yes.
And
yes.
Be like, you might have seen him. He was just on Johnny Carson. And my dad was like, he was never on Johnny Carson. But like, they would just like lie about that.
There was no DVD.
There was
no
DVD.
You can never not prove it.
There's no YouTube.
Yeah, you just say it. And they would. They would tour the, you know, and if you watch this Kutcher's documentary, it is very raw because the the documentary was made when it was going way down, and they eventually closed a couple years later in the 90s. And it was the last of the great, quote unquote, great resorts. But I don't know. So yes, I'm on a Casco kick lately, and I want to talk to people who are part of it.
Kevin David Thomas was just on the Mike Douglas show. Let's give him a big round of applause. Let's give him a big Kutcher's welcome.
He'll be in the red room at 4 o'clock, right after the bingo. Pinochle's at 6.
Don't forget, Kevin's show is sponsored by Aqua Velva. And the other thing he said that they did, which is a little tacky, but you know.
Hello, it's the Catskills. Now you know where I get it from.
Well, this is real tacky.
What?
They would dress up in suits and just walk into weddings and bar mitzvahs. And bring like an empty box that was wrapped and place it on the gift table and then eat all the free food.
Yeah, I believe that. Yep. I believe that. Yep. There's a joke in the reading of the musical I did where they're like, you know, they do these little like radio things like, there's going to, we'll be looking at pictures from the Rabinowitz's bar mitzvah at 4 o'clock in the green room. Yeah. And they shares like,
can I add
believe that
to
it
my
was
calendar?
Very community. Like, I think that you went, you saw the same families, you did the same. It's Dirty Dancing, basically. Yeah. Dirty Dancing. So
that's anyway. A good movie.
So yeah, so you're probably listeners. I apologize, but not really. I'm probably going to explore more of the Catskills and what the theater people who got started there, because there's a treasure trove there. I'm kind of fascinated.
Kevin was just in the Broadway sensation, Walking Happy.
You kind of remind me of like the priest from Princess Bride. Marriage. Twilav.
No, but thank you, Kevin. Don't forget, Kevin and his magic doves will be in the blue room.
Well, this documentary, this documentary is so sad because like they interview people that clearly have been with the resort for 20 years.
Oh, yeah.
And the resort's like clearly going down, and they're still trying to, well, maybe we can bring it back, you know, the comedian, quote unquote. Comedians. It's tragic, but fascinating. Anyway,
and all
we're
those
here.
Horrible jokes, like the sexist, racist.
So sexist.
Jokes.
So, yes. Yes. Husband and wife jokes about never having sex and like, you know, all of that stuff and sleeping in separate beds and that whole era.
My wife and I agreed we'll only smoke after sex. Problem is, I've had one cigarette in 4 months. She's up to 3 packs a day. But I'm Maury, you're late on the drums.
Thank you for that. Thank you.
Thank you.
My favorite thing.
Sorry, I should ask you, what's your favorite thing?
Mine's. It's a documentary, technically. It was first a television show for great performances. And then you can buy this on Amazon. However, clips of it are on YouTube. So I'm going to honor the DVD and say you need to buy the DVD on Amazon, but I'm going to say you can cheat and look at a couple clips. It's not the full documentary is on YouTube, but you can cheat and look at some of the clips, but I highly recommend getting the entire documentary. I've been wanting to talk about this for a while. I think it is an inside.
Oh.
So if we have the famous Penny Baker Company, you know, documentary.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I'm trying to think of other, like I talked about it last week, the Every Little Step, you know, the actual documentary of the making of A Chorus Line. This is another documentary about the making of a cast recording.
Is this the Guys and Dolls
this
one?
This is the Guys and Dolls Off the Record.
Off the
is
Record.
What it's called. And you can get it on Amazon for a steep $25. I know.
Is that
I know.
Where Nathan Lane's wearing that horrible Hawaiian shirt?
Yes. Well, it's very 90s, very early 90s. Actually, I'm gonna say it's 80. 80s bled into like 92, 93, if you look back. And yes, it is. This documentary, though, is really, I think it's really fascinating. I think that it's this time period of late 80s, early 90s through, I want to say mid-aughts, when the internet was there, but people nowadays, if we take a selfie, if we take a video, we know that it's going to be there for generations to come. We know that we're taking it and knowing that people will see this. I love this era of time, even going back further, like the Merv Griffin show and stuff like that, because none of these people were saying things thinking that people today would be watching it.
Yes.
They weren't as precious about it, you know? And this documentary, I find, is a little similar to that. That Nathan Lane and Jerry Zaks, and they're really, this camera is witnessing there's nothing set up about it. Even if there are some setups in the Every Little Step documentary, you know, like them receiving the news, they got the part. I don't get the sense of that at all. I get the sense that, like, Faith Prince is talking about her process and how she came up with some of this stuff. And Jerry Zaks is doing his thing where he, like, literally is spoon feeding them the light readings because he's known for that. Like, go up on the end of the line, you know? and you see him talking with them, you get an insight. Actors never really, unless it's a talk back and they talk too much, they don't really talk about their process. I can't stand talk backs for that reason.
I hate talk backs.
I avoid them. I think they're great for the audience, but as an actor, to hear like, oh my God, shut up. Nobody cares.
Especially when the performance was bad.
Yes. And they're like, well, I'm da, 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 and they go through their whole process, and it's really like, no, the audience just wants to know how you memorized all of those lines. So, I mean, seriously. But this documentary, Off the Record, of Guys and Dolls, 1992 cast recording sessions, you really see the acting and the directing and all of that. So, like I said, you can cheat a little bit, and you can look at some of the YouTube clips that exist online. If you wish to do that, again, I'm not a proponent of not paying for things, but in our business, sometimes you have to cheat a little bit. And I want to say, go buy the DVD Off the Record of the great performance PBS of this documentary. However, you can cheat, and you can type in "sue me Nathan Lane Faith Prince," and you will see. Starts out with Faith Prince sitting like in like a waiting area talking about how she plays the part. And you're going to see Adelaide's Lament. She's talking about Adelaide's Lament. And you see Jerry Zaks coming in and directing her and telling her to, like I said, go up online, giving her actual like real direction for this studio recording. Then you see her in the studio with Nathan Lane doing "Sue Me." And you get to see them... I guess what I'm amazed about is if you ever listen to a cast recording and think, oh, are they acting or are they just looking at the music? You see pictures of people with like the headphone half on, like Mariah Carey. Well, they are giving you full acting, full beats, full and "Sue Me," which you could easily say is it's just a throwaway number. It's just a comedic thing. I know. It's like this little fluffy thing from 1950. They are treating it like it's Angels in America. They are treating it like it is. And that's why it pops and it lifts off the table. And it proves to me, young singers and old, that you treat that old material as if it were written today. And you don't wink at it. And you don't like make fun of it. But if you honor it and sing it the way it's meant to be sung. And yes, it's a frothy little thing, but if you put the circumstances are real, that she's like, it's life and death thing here. You know, she's like, marry me, come on. And he's like, I know, I just, and so you get this in the video. You see them, what you hear all the time in that cast recording, and you actually see it. And it's thrilling. It's absolutely thrilling. A couple other things to check out. Also, very interesting. They cut away. So there's lots of cutaways. So they'll be singing in the studio and then they cut away to them like interviewing them a little bit. And Faith Prince is like, you can tell that she and Nathan Lane were not the best of friends during this. And yet their chemistry is good. Like, but she, I the interview, the no, literally she's like, well, she's the interviewer. And I don't know what the question they asked, but she's kind of like, well, it's really funny. Nathan and I, we don't even socialize that much off stage. We don't talk to each other really off stage. But then, so you get the sense that they don't really, so you kind of, they don't talk to each other. They get done with one of the sessions and she kind of comes over to Nathan to be, because they were singing opposite each other and they've got great chemistry while they're singing to each other. She kind of pats him on the back. Fully ignores her. He's fully ignoring her. And then she comes up to him again. Then she hugs him and gives him a cheek, kiss on the cheek. And he kind of is like, yeah, hugs her and then moves on, wants to talk to other people. So you get a sense of that. And yet when they're singing though, their duet, it's spot on. They're with each other in that. Oh. But I just want you to just look out for that little moment where she's like, we don't socialize all that much. And
So I heard the opposite. Did you ever hear that story about Vicky from Vicky Clark?
No.
So Vicky was Faith Prince's understudy.
Yeah.
And she said that when she had to go on, she was like, it was like daggers going through her. She goes, because he loved Faith so much.
Okay.
So.
Oh, hey, well, who knows? Well, you never know, because it could be one of those things where they enjoyed each other on stage, but they just really didn't have anything to, they didn't have anything to relate to. I'll say, who
like
knows?
You and I.
I would friendship only exists when we're rolling. Another, just really quickly, friends, another clip that I think is really, oh no, actually at the end of this.
Oh. Sue Me really quickly. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
There's also a great one of them on the Johnny Carson show doing Sue Me in costume.
I would love to see that. We'll have to post that as well. Also, interestingly enough, because this is two of our most recent guests for our interview series, Michael Starobin and Seymour Red Press, the famous music coordinator who, in this clip, which is so awesome, so Michael Starobin did the orchestrations for this 92 thing. You see him and his kind of like balding in the top, like hair fro yes, out the sides. Yes, hair so fro. Awesome. And you see him working on the orchestrations. And then during My Time of Day, another clip that you can go to, My Time of Day with Peter Gallagher, obviously. Mm-hmm. And you hear him, you know, rehearsing the melody, trying to get it just right before he does it. But they do a full, like, 2-minute cut to Red Press, this legendary, not only coordinator for a music contractor, but woodwind player, and you see him playing the saxophone during this My Time of Day lick. It is Peter Gallagher doesn't enter singing because he's like, I'm so moved by this, by his playing. It's so stunning. It's so cool that Peter Gallagher is taking time to recognize this instrumentalist who is so special, and that the camera stays on Red the whole time.
I gotta see that.
It's real, especially because I was like watching, thinking, oh my god, we just literally talked to him now 20 some years later, and he's like 94, but he was in his 60s or 70s in this thing. So I think it's really, really special. I think this is a special documentary because you get an inside look on what it is to make a cast recording without the drama that the company one had, because we all know the Stritch stuff.
Yes.
We all know that part of it. And it's not as artistic as the Pennybaker, but it is a unfiltered snapshot of this recording process, which hasn't changed that much. Like, we still get put into a room, the orchestra is separated. It's not like the old days where you get thrown to church and we all make the music together. You see what it's like to record. You see how they fine-tune every single little thing. And I think it's great for students to learn the process and what it takes to capture the cast album.
That's really marvelous. They also did one for the producers, right?
PBS. Have not seen that one.
Oh, that's a good one. It's funny.
Okay.
I mean,
imagine.
Because it's like Mel Brooks running around doing stand-up.
Right. Because he isn't going to be writing the music down because he doesn't read or write music. So,
but he's very open about that.
No, yeah. Doesn't Glenn Kelly and Doug Besterman, he gives them all the credit, and he you know, it's he definitely gives it. But it's the man sang into a tape recording, and they filled it out.
Mel Brooks was just on the David Susskind show last week.
He's way too famous for the Catskills. It'd be like, Mel Brooks' first assistant's going to be here tonight.
You all know the hit comedian Mel Brooks? Well, so does our new comic, Stevie. They shared an elevator together at Junior's, and Jackie Mason wouldn't give up his table by the window.
Who I always see outside of this building. We record Friends at Shetler Studios, and I feel like once a month I see Jackie Mason out by the Applejack Diner.
Always at an empty table.
Always at an empty
table. He'd be a great Marius. Empty chairs at empty tables.
Stop it. What's your favorite thing?
I thought it was Jackie Mason singing Les Mis. my friends, forgive me.
That's good.
Is this what the sacrifice was for?
You know, one of my favorite movies as a child. Now, this is embarrassing. It's almost as embarrassing as me liking
Caddyshack 2. I'm the same.
I love you so much, Robert Schneider.
You know that Jackie...
I love Caddyshack 2. It is probably one of the worst movies.
Mr. Jones!
He's like, what's a funzanoom? A funzanoom. You know, he's a funzanoom. Like,
funzanoom is when you fart in the bathtub and you bite the bubbles.
Yeah, that's exactly
right? That's it.
Oh, and Randy Quaid, who goes crazy as the lawyer, who probably was just acting normal that day.
Yes.
They're like, here, Randy,
just
here's
turn
a
on
bat.
The camera.
Now go. Oh my God, I cannot believe I just talked about Caddyshack 2.
Oh. It's
Chevy Chase.
Mr.
Arjunian. So let me get this straight. You pull. No, yeah. I suck. No, I pull, you suck. He's got hit in the butt.
And the great Jonathan Silverman.
Robert Stack.
So do you know that this is a true story? This happened apparently at the Carnegie Deli. So Jackie Mason was at the Carnegie Deli.
Of course.
And Rodney Dangerfield walked in.
No, this sounds like the start of a joke.
And they hadn't met each other before. And Rodney Dangerfield went up to him and said, look, it's a little guy who stole my part. Because Rodney Dangerfield was in the first Caddyshack,
right.
Asked for too much money for Caddyshack 2, and they're like, fine, we'll get Jackie Mason. So Jackie Mason said, well, I didn't steal a part. They offered me a role. You turned it down. And apparently, Rodney Dangerfield punched Jackie Mason, and they had to throw them both out of the restaurant. They got into a fist fight at the Carnegie Deli.
I'm going to go on record now and say that your Jackie Mason is one of my favorite impersonations you've ever done.
What? Do you like something I did?
Yeah. Yes, I did. That was good.
This is a blessing? This is a mitzvah?
I still want your favorite thing, but I really love the Jackie Mason.
Thank you. I worked on that one.
That was nice.
Thank you. If you can do a good Jackie Mason, you can come sit next to me.
Okay.
Or sit next to Jackie Mason at the Applejack
Diner.
I bet
he played the Catskills, though.
Oh, yeah. Do you know he was a rabbi before he became a comedian?
Really?
Yeah, he was a rabbi before he became a comedian. Huh. He's had such an interesting life. I know we all laugh now, but...
But he kept... Remember when we came to New York in the aughts? Like, he was still pumping out shows put on Broadway. He would do, like, those little, like... Probably for the Catskill crowd, but like, you know, the people that
the
we used to go to.
The World According to Me and Love Thy Neighbor. No,
like,
is that now?
It'd be like a 1 month run at the, you know, the Long Acre. And do like one little show with like a couple chorus girls. And
he'd pack them in.
Yeah. Oh, that Catskill crowd retired and still lives here.
Oh, he was so fun. Oh, I saw him live once at a theater in L.A. and it was a big theater. And someone from the balcony yelled, "Speak up." And he's like, "You should have bought better seats."
That's good.
It's like, good for you. Yeah, really fascinating.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
Okay, oh, so mine, this is interesting. I've never done this before, but I was so inspired by the NT Live broadcast episode.
The National Theater, yeah.
That we talked about last week. I'm going to give you, it's weird, it's three separate books that are not at all connected in terms of publication, but all have the same three thing in common.
Oh.
And that's the three things are the National Theater. The books are Laurence Olivier's autobiography, Confessions of an Actor. It's four books. It's a four-book series. And you'll figure out what they have in common in a second. It's Laurence Olivier's Confessions of an Actor, Peter Hall's Diaries, The Stories of a Dramatic Battle, a book called National Service by Richard Eyre, and a book called Balancing Act by Nicholas Heitner. Now, you might think to yourself, what do these four books have in common? All four of these men were artistic directors of the National.
Right.
And while Olivier mentions it in his autobiography briefly, Peter Hall's Richard Eyre and Nicholas Heitner's are all about their time at the National. Peter Hall and Richard Eyre actually kept a diary.
Okay.
That was like, on this day we did this, I saw a rehearsal for this, it's not very good. Who's this new actor, Michael Gambon? Ooh. Question mark. Boy, Judi Dench really can't master this scene. Nicholas Heitner, who was the most recent artistic director of the National Theater, his is not a diary, but an autobiography about his time and... We don't have anything like the National Theater. And it really disappoints me that we don't have Lincoln Center. Like, if you go to the National Theater in London, you have three wonderful spaces, all in this amazing complex with these shows that run forever, you know, 8-9 month long runs of
and
shows.
And I will say, much kind of like Lincoln Center, I think they try this a little bit, but it's a public space too.
It's
like people, not even just theater goers. Like when I was in London, we hung out in that public space, and there's those tables. I mean, you congregate there to hang out. It's an arts space.
It's an arts space, and the community is so actively involved. Like picking a new artistic director at the National makes front page news over there, and people argue and viciously debate who should get this position. Mm-hmm. We don't have that here, and I wish we did. And I know when we interviewed Michael Riedel, he does not want a National Theater.
He doesn't want the arts to be...
dependent upon.
And have to report to the government in order to get their funding.
I get that. I mean, I get that, but, you know...
You got to have no strings. Then there's got to be a way to do it that you can have subsidized theater like most countries do.
And I think the National does it really well. So I think what's so fascinating is as you read these four men's autobiographies and talking about what does it take to run a theater that's responsible not just to its audience, but to the people and citizens of the country that they inhabit.
Right.
And what sort of plays do you do to reflect what the country is going through. So anyway, I just find it all really, really fascinating. And I think I love reading diaries.
Oh.
I don't keep... Do you keep a diary?
No.
Or a journal? Don't, right. I don't either.
I've done it when I was younger and I traveled. And I'm so thankful I did because you...
Oh, smart.
You don't realize that you... When you read your own words from back then, you do get right back into that mindset again. Although you can't get there without those words. So I get why people did, you know? I wish I did. I was just... You're talking about this right now and I was thinking to myself, well, if I ever was a part of a production that I thought... Maybe this will be like I should have done it during Rebecca. You know, I should have really kept notes and kept track.
Oh my God, absolutely!
But so no, I do not. But I too love reading other people's diaries.
When I did vanities at Second Stage, because it was my internship for school, I had to keep a diary. I
have you gone back and looked at it?
Yeah,
yeah.
And my observations, I think, were pretty accurate.
Yeah, no, but you never know. That could come in handy someday, you know?
You never know.
When someone's like, oh, well, does anyone know anything about this vanities thing that happened?
I do.
Yeah.
I can tell you everything that happened. I'm the expert. But I think it's so fascinating that in all their busyness, they took time to actually spend a couple moments at the end of the day and write down their thoughts and observations. But it's also chronicling the movement of drama. And them, you know, going, I wonder if this thing War Horse is going to be any good.
Mm-hmm.
Or Richard Eyre's fantastic work at the National. And so much of Richard Eyre's work at the National transferred here in the 90s. Remember that stuff? So anyway, it's those are my suggestion because I think it's absolutely fascinating to look and see how a theater is run and operated. And in a totally candid, unfiltered review. In fact, Peter Hall's diaries were so controversial, they made the number 3 on the bestseller list, and it ended his relationship with Harold Pinter. They had a really close relationship, and Harold Pinter was like, after what you write, I can't be your friend anymore.
Ooh.
And the associate artistic directors at the National at the time were like, Michael Blakemore, and I forget the other person, they were like, we can't look Peter in the eye anymore. Because it was that open and that candid.
I like when you feel like it's all the good stuff hasn't been taken out, you know?
Richard Eyre's is really fascinating because a lot of it discusses the works that he did, because he's a director, you know, as well, and his collaborations. But he brought things in like Arcadia and the Tom Stoppard stuff and The Madness of King George, which was brought over here. Yeah. Nicholas Heitner's, which I just read, which is called Balancing Acts, is marvelous because I think Nicholas Heitner was the most influential artistic director of the National Theater because he was the one who introduced 10-pound tickets. Hmm. He made a collaboration with Travelex, and they gave away thousands upon thousands of 10-pound tickets for young people to come and see the theater.
Brilliant.
People that would not have come to the theater before were now allowed to come into the theater. And he was the one who helped spearhead NT Live.
That's fantastic. I'm so glad.
And, what shows did he direct?
Oh, yeah.
This is separate
from... This is Nick Heitner.
Yeah, not only did he bring these shows to America, he also directed them as well. The 94 Carousel.
Mm-hmm.
He shepherded War Horse.
Mm-hmm.
Sweet Smell of Success, he directed.
Miss Saigon, too.
Miss Saigon.
The earliest. I mean, that was
The History Boys.
Yeah.
One Man, Two Governors. I mean, his...
Center Stage, the movie. One of his only movies.
He talks about what it's like making movies.
I have to say that it's always been a favorite of mine.
He talks a lot about what it's like making movies.
That was a favorite thing.
So, yeah, it was. So, if you want, read Balancing Acts, because he's the most recent of ours. But I would encourage you to buy all 4 of these books, because I think it's so fascinating to see these great minds how do you marry art and commerce? How do you? Not many people do that.
Right.
Who in our country? Hal Prince. You know what I mean? Who created?
Yeah, but no. I mean, I don't even.
But then
think
Hal
so,
Prince wasn't.
He does big. He still is in it for the commercially. You know.
Yeah.
He creates great art by a byproduct, and I would argue that he probably would argue that, of course, he's always trying to create great art. But these guys do stuff that, like, it's like the public theater, I think, is the closest we
have. Yes, yes.
You know? But yet, they would not be where they are if they didn't have a Chorus Line be such a big commercial hit.
Exactly.
So it's so nice now. They got all this money, but it's like, so they can afford. But they never lost sight of that Joe Papp vision of, like, never selling out to the white way, even though they have to in order to make money sometimes.
But
they give us Carolina Change, you know,
absolutely.
That they know is not going to be a hit.
But also what I'm thinking is all these great actors that we have in our country that don't do... I think that's the difference that we miss, because at the National, you can get Judi Dench in there for like 4 months doing Troilus and Cressida or whatever. And we can't, I mean, everything here is limited run now.
Right.
I mean, they've got a movie, they've got a TV show.
Oh,
we get Denzel Washington
for a couple minutes.
And yeah, you get like, congratulations, you get Denzel Washington for like, you know, 3 weeks and we move on with our lives.
Yeah.
So I wish there was a home And it's right. I mean, our country is
a little bit, but that's
and
not
we're
really
so spread out. I mean, there's lots of reasons why it doesn't happen. I just wish that there was a repository, a home where we could do. You know, young actors could learn their craft from bigger actors and then become those big actors themselves at some point. But I think these four books are really great looks into how a theater operates. Mm-hmm. How does a theater stay responsible to its financial investments and to its producers and to its government and to its people and also create great art?
Yeah.
So anyway, I think so once again, the books are Laurence Olivier's Confessions of an Actor. He was our first artistic director of the National. Peter Hall's Diaries, The Story of a Dramatic Battle. Richard Ayer's National Service. And Nicholas Heitner's Balancing Acts. Also, Trevor Nunn was an artistic director of the National, but no book.
No book yet.
And the current one is Rufus Norris. But Nicholas Heitner's Balancing Acts is great.
Excellent.
He also has great observations on musical theater because of his Carousel and Sweet Smell of Success.
Oh, yeah.
And he's got some really, really great things to talk about. Nice. So that's appealing to those of us that like the musicals.
The musicale.
He met his husband, I think, doing Carousel.
Isn't that special?
I think so. Mm. I think so.
Well, thank you. I like that. Nice.
De nada, mi amigo. De nada. I hope you enjoyed that.
And mine is Guys and Dolls, the documentary of the cast recording session called Off the Record.
And don't forget, Off the Record will be in the Aqua Velvet Room at 2 o'clock tomorrow. I also sing Empty Chairs and Empty Tables. Oh, my friends, forgive me. What was your sacrifice for? Empty Chairs and Empty Tables. My friends, sing no more.
Thank you. There was a little B. Arthur, too, at the end.
Oh, well, he doesn't sustain notes either. No, okay. So there you go. Yeah. But I'm happy that we love Caddyshack, too.
I am, too. I really was shocked that you knew that.
I was obsessed with Caddyshack.
I'm usually the only person who knows it. I own it. I know every word from it. I loved that movie.
Dare I say that Caddyshack 2 to me is superior to the first Caddyshack?
Done. Hands down, in my book.
I know that might
is
upset
a
lot of
that
people.
Is like messed up.
Although Caddyshack 1 has one of my favorite lines, which is a little racially insensitive, so I can't share it with you on air, but I'll tell you off air because it makes me laugh. Goodbye.
Bye.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens. Bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things. These are a few of my favorite things.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard. So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.